The Final Four is set with a Cinderella and visions of NC State and Jim Valvano running onto the court, a first for the Crimson Tide, Purdue's championship quest, and a possible repeat for UConn, plus anticipation on the women's side as LSU versus Iowa will clash tonight for a trip to the semifinals. The baseball season is just 4 days old and there's plenty to chew on, including my dark twisted nightmare. Oh, I'll definitely explain that. The NBA and NHL seasons are in the home stretch as I'll check in on what's the latest and greatest there. And the NFL's up to its old tricks while the Jets make another splash as they do whatever it takes to erase last season's debacle. It may be April 1st, but there'll be no fooling around as your boy is back ready to fire on all cylinders. It's all coming up, but first, these messages. I'm elated and honored to welcome in a new partnership here on the podcast. Are you familiar with Olipop Soda? If you're not, well, listen up. I haven't been a soda drinker for quite some time, but when I discovered Olipop and what they're all about, I was all in. Not only is it a prebiotic soda that's good for your gut, it's non-GMO, organic, with ingredients that you can actually read. That's right, no 12 or 14 letter words that you can't pronounce. And are you worried about the dreaded high fructose corn syrup? Not here, as there's very little sugar, 4 grams per serving. And then the flavors? You have vintage cola, orange squeeze, my favorite, tropical punch, banana cream, what? Plus the classics such as root beer, lemon lime, and ginger ale, which has a better taste. How could I forget the taste? Crisp, refreshing, without feeling bloated afterward, than the usual brands that you're familiar with. Right now, you can get 15% off at checkout when you use the code SODALOVE, and I'll get a percentage of that based on your purchase. It's a win-win for both of us. Please go to drinkolipop.com and use SODALOVE for 15% off at checkout. Thanks to the good people at Olipop, and an early thank you for shopping at drinkolipop.com. J-Reel's here to spend a brief moment and share a friendly reminder to please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast on whichever platform you listen to on the regular. Just so we can increase the visibility of the J-Reel's podcast to those who aren't familiar with it. Leave plenty of stars, write a favorable review. It will go a long way for the curious listener looking to hop on board to get a dose of entertaining and passionate sports talk. For the visually inclined, please subscribe to my YouTube channel at J-Reel's as I post daily shorts and weekly vlogs, not only delving into the world of sports, but follow me on my journey to take the podcast and channel to new heights as I provide an in-depth, behind-the-scenes look at what it takes for yours truly to produce content on a day-in, day-out, week-in, week-out basis. It goes without saying how much I truly appreciate all of your support. And without further ado, the J-Reels podcast begins in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's get this sports podcast party started, all right?
The J-Reels Podcast.
Why don't you wait until July 1st to make an announcement? What a disgrace. He can rack up all these numbers in October, November, and December, but what really counts is let me see this in January.
The sports rebel without a pause, delivering fast-paced, jam-packed sports talk like no other.
Listen, I gotta call it as I see it. He is not a good player. I'm sick and tired of having to deal with the disappointment of this franchise. When does it stop? And yes, another winter that I can sleep in peace. Coming correct, direct, and in full effect. Let's get it.
This is the J-Reels Podcast. Welcome aboard.
What is happening, my good people? Greetings. How are you? How's it going? How's everybody doing out there? What is the latest and greatest? Hope everybody's doing well, feeling fantastic, in excellent spirits. It's a new day, new week, new month, new quarter even. But do you think I'll be fooling around on this day? Not a chance, as the best sports month of the year has arrived, and I have a jam-packed, fast-paced, entertaining podcast ahead, as this is the J-Reels Podcast with your host, J-Reels. For my first-timers, welcome aboard. And for those who have been banging with me going back to the very beginning, somewhere in the middle, or even as early as this past Thursday, I welcome you guys and gals back. And before I even get into anything that has transpired in the sports world over the last few days, I have to offer a grand apology because after the MLB preview, I was supposed to put my usual Thursday podcast to recap what had happened in sports the prior 3 days and to set us up for at least this weekend with baseball and the Sweet 16, etc. And with unforeseen circumstances that were out of my control, there was no way for me to even record, let alone post a podcast on Thursday. And then Friday, I was thinking about recording and posting at least Thursday's podcast the day after, but with the Sweet 16 underway, I didn't want to start talking about the Sweet 16 and then have to preview the night games as well as what could we possibly see in the Elite Eight as we lead into the Final Four. So that is my bad. And I know I didn't keep anybody abreast on any of my social networks or my YouTube channel. So that is a my bad, hand raised high in the air. No excuses. You know I'm all about being accountable and transparent. So my deepest apologies there. Now, granted, yesterday was Easter Sunday. So I hope everybody enjoyed their Easter. And it happened to coincide with my 55th birthday. So it has been a crazy past few days. I know I haven't really posted a lot, especially on my YouTube channel, at JReels, if you're not aware, for my first-timers. But for the way the last few days had come about, and for yours truly not putting out that podcast, which again, I deeply apologize, and then for everything that had taken place over these past 3 days, including an Easter Sunday, including a birthday, and now that I could get to exhale a little bit and kind of catch us all up on what's happening in sports, that's why I'm here, and I am fired up, ready to go with everything that had gone on, so let's get right to it. And I want to give shouts to everybody who reached out yesterday, my lovely wife who was the MVP, who treated me to a wonderful day, and actually had some great weather here in the Northeast, as it was about a shade or two below 60 degrees. It was sunny, it's usually cloudy, rainy, dreary. Thankfully that wasn't the case, so I just want to send thanks to everybody who did extend well wishes for a happy birthday. I promise I'll get back to each and every one of you over the course of these next few days. But now, enough of that. Let's get right to it. And I have to admit, with all that had happened over the last 96 hours or so, I was in tune to what happened there in the Sweet 16, as we now have the Final Four set for the NCAA Men's Tournament. And I didn't watch basket by basket. Of course, I had my fingers on the pulse. So a lot of what I'm going to discuss here is going to go based on what I've read, more so than what I've seen. And of course, you know, I checked out highlights and saw what happened. But this was a very good Sweet 16. You had some big time surprises, as we know. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to cut to the chase with the teams that are the last four standing that we'll see in Glendale next weekend, or this coming weekend, Saturday, with the double dip. And we know who the four teams are. But let's go through their trial and their travels to get to this point. And a big overriding theme I'm going to look at is obviously the behemoth matchup that we could possibly see in a championship game between Purdue and UConn. And I would think a lot of people will want to hope for that, to see whether or not Purdue, their first time in the Final Four since 1980 and going back so many years, whether it's Gene Cady or even now Matt Painter, the coach, with the All-American Zach Edey, who had a monster game there, as we saw there yesterday against Tennessee. And for the Boilermakers to get to this point, we talked about this at the very start of the tournament, how they needed to get to a Final Four. But now that they're here, they have to seal the deal. And I'll unpack that in a couple of minutes. And then, of course, you have UConn, the defending champ, as we know. They have literally not broken a sweat throughout the course of this tournament. And even date back to last year, when they won the six games to win a national title, where was the one nail biter that they had, which usually a team goes through in their quest to win a championship? The Huskies haven't had that. It has pretty much been a cakewalk for this team, and who knows whether or not that they're going to have two more games in them, to the point where could they really go 12-0 over the course of these two seasons and then just hoist up another banner to the rafters at stores when they reconvene later on this fall? It's quite possible. Now, obviously, we'll have to wait till Saturday night where they'll have the second matchup of the double dip there in the semifinals there in Phoenix or outside of Phoenix. And then you have the two shocks, the two surprises. And NC State, if you don't have visions, as I mentioned, of Jim Valvano, the former coach of that 83 team with Derek Wittenberg and Lorenzo Charles, the putback dunk there at the end of the game over, not Hakeem, I was about to say Hakeem Olajuwon at the time, Clyde Drexler, Michael Young, Phi Slamajama, 41 years ago to this time where NC State was able to prevail and shock the world. And now they have an opportunity to do so again, where NC State, on the back of DJ Burns, the Z-Bo, the Zach Randolph lookalike, and he does, from the body type, the face, the baby face that he has, although Z-Bo had the Caesar haircut, where this kid, of course, has the dreads or the braids, and for NC State to have this role. And to me, they are the story of this tournament. because this is a team that when you look back to the ACC tournament, everybody thought they were going to be left for dead. They came into that tournament with 14 losses, and a lot of people thought that unless they win the entire ACC, that there's no way they're going to make it into the tournament. Well, sure enough, they ran the table, winning five games, had cut the nets there to win their conference championship, and then now, as one of the participants in the final 68, as an 11 seed, you thought, all right, their glass slipper, their magic carpet ride is probably going to fizzle out here. Maybe not in the first round, but quite possibly they won't get to a Sweet 16 and beyond. And here they are. And you have to give them tremendous credit because for the coach, Kevin Keats, behind their star, DJ Burns, and then you can even look at the other DJ on their team, Horn, who had 20 points in the game yesterday against the hated rival Duke, Blue Devils, and that was going to be an interesting matchup because, of course, both playing in the ACC Conference and knowing each other pretty well. And for Duke to beat Houston two nights earlier, and boy, would that have been ironic to set the stage for an NC State-Houston regional final for everything that I just talked about a few minutes ago. Obviously, you didn't get that, and that was just a tough break with a young kid, Jamal Sheed, who was an All-American in his own right, was lost for the game in the first half with an ankle injury, and Houston wasn't the same. Obviously, you could tell the heart and soul was just gutted from their team. All of the air just let out of the balloon. And sadly, Kelvin Sampson does not get back to a Final Four as a one seed, and their season goes up in smoke. Where Duke advances, they get to a regional final, and then go up against that buzzsaw of the Wolfpack, and everybody in Raleigh is just jumping up and down, going crazy to think that maybe this is their time. And think about this. Even on the women's side, NC State has made their Final Four. So think about that. You have the men's and women's will be in line for possibly playing in a championship game to set themselves up to maybe have both teams win a national championship. How about that for a storyline? So just think about what they've done just to get to this point. Sweeping the ACC tournament to get themselves into the tournament, and then now winning the first four games to get themselves set up for a matchup this coming Saturday night. And I'm sure everybody who had their brackets, and mine was blown up to smithereens a long time ago, so there isn't anything to discuss. But NC State, they'll be in the first game to go up against Purdue. And then you have Alabama. And I believe that this could be a first, and I should have double-checked this, but off the top of my head, just thinking back on the short history of the college football playoff and the semifinal, this is the first time, I believe, that you're going to have two schools fight in the semifinal. Now, of course, the college football playoff is not known as a Final Four, but you had Alabama, when they lost to Michigan, to set themselves up for a possible championship setup, and now you have Alabama, the basketball team, about to embark to do the same thing. And Alabama, give it up for what they've done. This is a team that has been overlooked, not amongst the big-time college basketball fan. I'm not going to go as far as saying that. But for the Crimson Tide, and everybody knows they're a football school tried and true, but the basketball team has certainly stepped up. And even last year, remember, they also had a big year, and a lot of people thought that they were going to make some hay and go deep into the tournament, even though they had some controversy surrounding them with one of their players who got drafted into the NBA this year, as we know. But for the Crimson Tide and their quest here, now granted, give them the credit of beating North Carolina there a few nights ago, and Carolina, that was tooth and nail. They were actually down by 8 at the half, and then it was pretty much a rock fight from that point on to where Carolina took the lead late, and you probably thought, I think they had the lead with about a minute 50 to go, up 3, but then Alabama was able to gut it out, show some grit, and they were able to prevail, even though a last-second Hail Mary heave was way short for the Tar Heels, and that is just a killer loss. Actually, the first one seed to leave the tournament because Houston was the next team right out of the gate later that evening. But for Carolina, who just had it all in front of them, and not to knock Alabama by any stretch, but we know the Tar Heels had a big season and they were hoping to get back to a championship game as they did 2 years ago. But the Crimson Tide thwarted that. And then they also thwarted Clemson, another team that was also riding high, being that Cinderella, if you will, as a six seed. But for Alabama and NC State, I think you have some very good balance here. going into this Final Four, and I'll get to that in a second. When we take a look at the way that these teams have gotten here, whether it's UConn, it's been a breeze. Same for Purdue, although they had to work hard against Tennessee, beating Dalton Connect, and they did a masterful job behind Zach Edey's 40 points, and I talked about that already. But now that we've gotten to this point to where we have a true Cinderella in NC State, and everybody's going to rally around the whole Jim Valvano, go back to YouTube or any of the highlights that you could see from that championship run, 1983, just phenomenal, and I'll never forget. I had just turned 14 years old, and I was watching that game in my father's apartment in Astoria, Queens, just to take it back. And I'll never forget, I was in shock, and everybody thought Houston was just going to steamroll the Wolfpack, and that was not the case. And then, of course, you had that last-second shot there. I believe it was Derek Wittenberg and then Lorenzo Charles. It was almost an alley-oop when you think about it. Just literally put it back in with no time on the clock. And NC State with Valvano running just aimlessly throughout the court, and just a big-time upset there. And I'm sure that's going to be the rallying cry for that coach, for that team, school, etc., to see whether or not they can advance, get to a championship game. And then, of course, all bets are off. At that point, it'll pretty much be a toss-up, even though there'll be a huge underdog in that game. So for them, and the same for Alabama, to do something that the football team was unable to do this year, and we understand the football team is going to be much more reputable and it's going to stick out like a sore thumb more so than the basketball team, but this is where they can make their mark too. And you have to give it up for what they've done. And how I look at the Crimson Tide, and even NC State for that matter, I think they could be live dogs, but again, they're going now into the deep end of the pool. But we could also look at teams that have made it this far and maybe not belong, so to speak, although they deserve it. And I will never say that they don't belong, but I'm sure there's going to be a lot of naysayers out there to think that, all right, they've gone on this four-game roll and they've pulled out big games and upsets, etc. But now they're going to go up against the one seeds. And we all know that one seeds aren't guaranteed here when you get to this stage. Now, of course, they're going to be heavily favored to win these games, and I don't even know what the point spreads are. But I really feel that these teams are going to be tough, especially NC State, because now they have, not to say a chip on their shoulder, but they have all the momentum in the world. And to me, these are house money games for both the Wolfpack and the Crimson Tide, because a lot of people thought that they weren't going to even be here. And now they're going to go up against the big, bad, mighty UConn Huskies, that being the Crimson Tide. And then, of course, NC State is going to go up against Purdue. Now, if it's 47 to 25 at the half, then you're going to think, oh, geez, this is what we expected. Let's just get to Purdue and UConn, and let's see who's going to be the best team in college basketball. Yes, that could possibly happen. But I'm trying to remain a little bit faithful, because it's easy for me to just kind of kill the underdog, to kind of just say, all right, it's been a great ride, but now they're going to get smacked down. And do I really feel that in my gut that it's going to happen? I have to say the cynic in me would say yes, more so than them being in a competitive game in the second half. But would I be shocked if that's the case? Would I tune in and then to see Alabama, or in the first game, NC State, let's say they're up by five with about 13 minutes to go in the second half? I would not. And the same would go for Alabama. So the one thing I do know going into these matchups on Saturday, and we'll talk more about this on the podcast come Thursday, and I promise you, come Thursday, I will have a podcast. But for UConn, they've been there. They've done that. Purdue hasn't. Now, this is a big-time exhale for the Boilermakers, for their coach, players, school, etc. But now that they've gotten here, they got to get to a championship game. They just can't look at getting to a Final Four as, whew, finally, now we could wipe our brow. We could kind of just, not necessarily relax, but take a break. And, oh, okay, we're going to play NC State. I know it's going to be tough, but we're looking ahead to UConn. You know UConn's not doing that against Alabama. And that's the one thing that I fear about Purdue. Would they rest on their laurels of winning a regional final, getting to a Final Four? And not to say that they're going to take their opponent lightly, not in the least, but because they finally got to a Final Four, is it going to be to a point where, uh-oh, now we're in a rock fight? Now this is going to be hotly contested. Oh, wait, now we're trailing by five. Oh, now it's late in the first half. We're down by double digits. Do they think that they could turn the switch on and automatically go on that run led by their big man to see if they could somehow, some way pull out a victory when the situation is dire? UConn's not going to do that. They won a championship. They won a title. They know what it takes. And even if things get a little fuzzy or hazy, they're going to be composed because that team knows how to play. Even without the big players that you saw last year, the Sonogos, the Jordan Hawkins of the world, obviously they're not there, but this team is still very resourceful. They know how to win. They have that DNA in them. So those would be, to me, a couple of the storylines going in. I'll unpack that a little bit more, obviously, when we get to Thursday's podcast. But you had a compelling Sweet 16, obviously, with the aforementioned teams. And yes, you had the two number ones go by. Duke, what could you say? I'm sure a lot of the Blue Devil fans were hoping to get back to a Final Four, which would have been great for John Shire, the coach that obviously filled in, well, I don't say filled in, but was able to be the next guy in line after Mike Krzyzewski left a couple of years ago. And now it's all set. Here's your Final Four. I think it's intriguing. I think the game's going to be good. Obviously, I can't promise you that. And one more time, do I think it could be more of the blowout than the close game? If I had to guess on my meter, let's say from 50-50 on up and down, I would say it could be 65-35, maybe even 70-30, where the favorites will have, not a blowout win, but let's just say have a comfortable win where they're going to be heavily favored, as we know, but a situation where the chances of the underdog maybe being in the game would be somewhere in that 30-35%. I can't say 60-40 because you have to give respect to those one seeds and what they've done here so far. And it's not to knock anything what NC State and Alabama has done to get here. But as I mentioned, this is the deep end of the pool. And yes, they are playing fast and loose, house money, etc. because nobody thought that they would even get here. This is Alabama's first time in the Final Four ever. And sometimes when you get to be that team first time, bright lights, the big gym, the sight lines, unlike the small gyms that they've been playing in throughout the course of the year, that factors in. And even NC State, I get it. We can look at them as an 11 seed. They lost 14 games, the most ever for a team that's made it to a Final Four. And yes, the clock could strike 12, 100%. That's why I have to give it 65-35 for the chance for the big-time teams, the number one teams, to have that much of an advantage to beat their opponents. So that's what we have there. And I'll pivot quickly to the women's side. Not that I follow. I know there's been some controversy with some comments directed toward LSU. And then this three-point situation, which I haven't really massaged it to the point where I could really speak on it. So that's my error there. But what I can say is that tonight you have a big-time matchup, which I like, but I don't like because I'd rather see this in a semifinal, in a Final Four, than a regional final. And I'll get to that in a second. But you already have the one side of the bracket filled where South Carolina, no shock there. They win their region, so they're going to represent as they have been over the last few years with Dawn Staley and company, the head coach. And then you have NC State, as I mentioned, the women's side. Let's see if they can also continue their quest to maybe even upset the mighty South Carolina Gamecocks and see if they could go ahead and represent in a championship setting. And then on the other side, tonight, LSU and Iowa. And then the other game, you have the Lady Huskies. That's right. You could possibly see the women's team on the UConn side also represent with the men's. And I believe that could also be a first where you had both schools represented by the men's and women's of each of their sports in the Final Four. Obviously, NC State's there, and UConn could have a chance to do that when they play the USC Trojans tonight. But I know all eyes are going to be on LSU and Iowa. We talked about that in the past, and last year, obviously, that was the big game where you had Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, and even Angel Reese had to say the other day that I don't hate Caitlin Clark because, of course, everybody's trying to dredge those stories from last year during the run to the championship, and it's unfortunate that this game is tonight and not in a Final Four setting, but hey, it is what it is. I know a lot of people, there's going to be a lot of eyeballs. I would love to hear what the rating is going to be or see what the rating is going to be when that game is going to be played. And then, of course, you're going to have the Final Four this coming weekend where it's Friday and Sunday, so it's a quick turnaround, unlike the men's where you had the last couple of games there yesterday. And, of course, you have Saturday being the first of the two games there in the semifinals in Glendale. So for tonight, LSU-Iowa, that's going to be, I'm sure, highly watched. I know a lot of people's radar is going to be tuned into that. Maybe some people will be into the baseball. Who knows with the NHL? I know you may have some NBA folks to tune in to see what's happening there, but I would think college basketball on the women's side may be the hot topic come tomorrow, especially when you have those two teams going at it. And if UConn does advance to the Final Four, you also have that angle to discuss. But listen, I can't tell you who's going to win this game tonight. I haven't followed to the extent where I've been watching LSU and even Iowa for that matter. But this is going to be, if you ask me, this is a huge game for Caitlin Clark. She has to get to the next step. And if she loses the game and scores 35, what could you say? You got to tip your hat to the Tigers. But if she plays poorly and if LSU really zeroes in and focuses in on Caitlin Clark to the point where she shoots poorly, does not have a great game, they force her into turnovers, etc., then that could be an indictment. I understand you got to give credit to LSU if they do happen to execute that game plan, whatever that game plan may be. But for Clark, this is a huge game for her because she has to get to, I think, in my eyes, a Final Four to at least compete to get to a championship and then see where the chips fall from there. Because as we all know, decorated and deserved. All the accolades that she's gotten throughout the course of these last 2 years. But if you're going to be in the pantheon of the all-time great, and I just don't want to pigeonhole it as just women's players because the grand scheme of things is one of the great college players of all time. But she does play, of course, the women's sport. But if she wants to be discussed in the line of Shamika Holtzclaw, Tamika Catchings, Cheryl Swoops, Sue Bird, Rebecca Lobo, Diana Taurasi, I could go through a million players. And for those I haven't even touched on, my apologies. But if she wants to be in that pantheon, she has to play in a final and win that game. Because that's going to go a long way. Now, is she an all-time great now? Yes. But is she going to be amongst the ranks of those who are champions and multiple national championship winners? That's all you got to discuss. That's it. That's the line. Because we could talk about the Charles Barkleys of the world, the Karl Malones, the Dan Marinos. Yes, they were great. And they were all-time greats. But to be in that pantheon, you got to win. So this is a big moment for Clark tonight to advance to get to a Final Four. So we'll certainly unpack that come Thursday. And obviously check the YouTube channel for shorts, whether later tonight or tomorrow, which I'll get into that because I definitely have to watch that. I'm going to be in tune to what takes place there tonight between those two teams. And of course, we'll see what happens there with UConn and USC. So that's what I have with the college basketball. Let me get to the pros. I'll touch on that, and then I'm going to touch on some baseball after that because I got a lot to discuss there, and I'll try to keep that concise because for those who've listened to me over the years, and especially just in the last few weeks, just talking about baseball, you know where I'm going with this dark, twisted nightmare that I've had just 4 days into the baseball season, but I'll put that on hold for now. As for the NBA, here we are, the last, seven, 8 games of the season. This is the home stretch as we get through this slog. The postseason, right now, we can kind of see it. It's in the forefront. It's past the mountains, and you can see the trees to the right, and maybe there's a couple of gas stations, but you could see on the not-too-distant horizon that the NBA playoffs are near. And pretty much what I have here, and I'll go through a couple of different storylines. I know LeBron was in town yesterday, and he had a career-high 9 threes against the Brooklyn Nets and matched something that Michael Jordan did with another 40-point night at his age, 39 years of age. And what more could you say about LeBron? And I'm not here to throw more bouquets at him, but the Lakers are right now in the middle of a East Coast trip where they've won 3 games, lost one, and they will go to Toronto and Washington before heading home. Now, they do have another date with the Warriors, I believe next week or maybe even this coming weekend, but I know it's within the next week or so. And that's going to be a huge game because we've talked about this ad nauseum at the bottom of the Western Conference between them and the Golden State Warriors. And I guess I'll touch on that right this second. Not to make it all about the Lakers, because there are some other teams that we need to get into. And another game that happened here locally between the Thunder and Knicks last night, which was a thriller to say the least. But for the Lakers, who currently at this very moment, ninth spot in the West, and chances are that's where they're going to stay when it's all said and done, because they are currently a game and a half, two in the loss behind the Suns. Could they even overtake the Suns and get the eighth seed? Which would be interesting, because then that would drop Phoenix and even Sacramento, because they're both tied with the same record. The Kings and Suns at 43 and 31, where the Lakers are 42 and 33. So both Sacramento and Phoenix have a game in hand on the Lakers, so keep that in mind. And then you have the Warriors at 40 and 34. One in the loss, but a game and a half behind them for the ninth spot in the West. And the Rockets, who had this long winning streak, 11 in a row. They got it snapped last night against the Mavericks. And you have to wonder, not to say one loss is all of a sudden gas is now starting to run out of their tank, but because this young team with Ime Udoka as the coach, is this going to be a thing with that loss? And then the Warriors, who have won four in a row, so they have been winning too to kind of keep themselves ahead of the pace there in the Western Conference. Is this going to be the beginning of the end for the Rockets? I don't expect them to run off. How many games they have left? Eight games. As I look here, yeah, they're 38 and 36. I don't expect them to go on an eight-game winning streak, or let's say win 7 of 8 or even 6 of 8. This could be where maybe, and I have to take a look at their schedule, where they may slip up and not be able to continue their winning ways here over the last couple of weeks, even longer than that, to see if they can not only keep pace but even overtake Golden State for that last spot in the Western Conference. So that's one race we'll have to keep an eye on, but I think the Rockets may start to fade here unless they can ratchet it up and at least keep their winning ways to a point where they can stay consistent and maybe not reel off 7 or 8 in a row. But again, they want to stay within arm's length as we get late in the season. As a matter of fact, let me pull up their schedule now just to see. And not only that, also, if there's another matchup with the Warriors, and actually they do. They have an enormous game and have a very tough schedule here. They go to Minnesota tomorrow. Then they host both Golden State in their building, Miami. They go to Dallas, where they lost to the Mavericks at home yesterday. The Magic come to their building. Then the final three games at Utah, at Portland, and at the Clippers, who may not even need the game. But they have a rough stretch here of games where I don't even think the Rockets are going to threaten the Warriors. And that game against the Warriors is on Thursday night. So it may come down to that for the Rockets on whether or not they're going to be alive in the final couple of games of the season. And as far as Golden State, what the hell, let's look at their schedule. I know I mentioned them having the Lakers on the docket here later on in the week, or maybe early next week. Golden State, who, like I mentioned, have won four in a row. Actually, they will host Dallas. Then they go to Houston. Then to Dallas, followed by a home game against Utah at the Lakers, which is the ninth. So that's a week from tomorrow night. At Portland, the Pelicans and Jazz to close out their season. So their schedule is a lot easier. Golden State should be able to win enough to at least get that 10 seed. So Houston, they may have a problem trying to get into the back door as far as the play-in tournament is concerned. So that's what you have there. But you had another instance last night where the Thunder were playing the Knicks. And the Knicks, Josh Hart, one of the players, had come out to say that it's unlikely that we'll have Julius Randle and OG Anunoby for any time in the foreseeable future, which would not bode well for the Knicks as far as having any length in the playoffs. So that's something you have to keep in mind there, but we'll talk about that more then. But that was a crazy game at the stretch. I know the Knicks missed a ton of free throws down the last couple of minutes and the last closing seconds of that game, especially with Jalen Brunson. But they were able to get a basket there late with about 7 seconds to go. And then SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, hit that tough fall away from the baseline to take a 113-112 lead. And then the Knicks weren't able to get the game-winning shot in the literal final second and a half, as the Knicks, who have played well, but they've kind of been up and down and they haven't been full. I understand that. And that's going to be tough because the Knicks have had a very good season. And this is a season that if they were healthy, they could possibly make a conference final. And I know that may be a bit of a stretch to say, but the Knicks have been very good. And Tom Thibodeau, we understand with his pedigree as a defensive-minded coach, and he's gotten a lot out of his players. But when you don't have Julius Randle, who's the number two guy on the team, and OG Anunoby, who they got in a trade in the middle of the season, who's a very good defender, could also score, but is more of a glue guy, and a guy that you're going to need, especially if you're going to go on a championship run, you can't win every game 140 to 135. So for the Knicks, tough loss there in their building, but we know OKC, they're a team, speaking of a race, they are currently, talk about a brawl. And we've talked about this for weeks, where you have OKC just a half game ahead of the Denver Nuggets there at the top of the Western Conference, followed by the T-Wolves, who are one game behind Oklahoma City and a half game behind Denver for those top three spots. I'll take a look at more of what their schedule is as we get to Thursday's podcast, because I got other things to discuss. But those three teams are going to be going at it to get that one seed. And for Denver, I don't think that's going to be much of an issue, because they could be a two seed or a three seed. You know they're going to be formidable and they're going to be a tough out once it gets to later this month. But for OKC and Minnesota, I would think they would want to have a game seven in their building. Granted that OKC, their way around the postseason is little to none. And the T-Wolves have been around the block in a postseason, although they don't have a wealth of experience, but they do have big-time players. And even with a lot of expectations going into this postseason, you would think that they're going to perform pretty well. And that also does remain to be seen whether or not Minnesota is going to have some legs. And I think that's an early storyline when we talk about an NBA playoff preview in the weeks to come. But that's going to be an interesting race to the end. And then you have your middle with the Clippers. Dallas two games behind the Clippers there. Same for the Pelicans, as they are both two games ahead in the 5-6. That's New Orleans and Dallas. Or I should say Dallas and New Orleans. And then you have Sacramento, Phoenix, Lakers, Warriors there in the West. So you have very interesting races there. Where in the East, you don't have a lot. I know that the Cavaliers are a half game behind. Or excuse me. They're actually 2.5 games. My eyes are deceiving me. And you would think the Bucks are going to be fine as we head down the stretch for a two seed. Cavaliers 3-6 right now with Indiana, as they're just a half game ahead of the Knicks. And they do have a game in hand, the Knicks. So that's also something to keep in mind too, because that game in hand could be where the Knicks could catapult themselves to a three seed and avoid having to be that 4-5 matchup that if they do win their first round opponent, which right now is looking like to be the Orlando Magic, they'll have to play the Celtics in the second round. So we'll have to see where that race will shake down. But then you have Orlando 5, Indiana 6. Indiana's currently two games and a game and a half behind Orlando there for the fifth spot. And then you have Miami, Philadelphia, where they may get Embiid back this week. And they're going to need him quick, fast, in a hurry. Now, the Sixers have what? 7 games left in their season. So any type of game action to just kind of ramp them up over these final couple of weeks of the season, they're going to need, because Philadelphia, I don't think they're going to be long for this postseason as it is. Obviously, without having Embiid for this stretch, and to kind of get him started up again, and we know he's had a history of injuries, especially with the lower regions of his body, knees, feet, etc. But for Philadelphia, who will currently be in that 7-8 game with Miami, unless Miami will be able to get into that top 6 and Indiana falls back. So Philly will have to go to Miami as of right this moment to play in a play-in scenario. And then you have Chicago and Atlanta trailing them. They're going to be the 9-10 for sure. You can forget about all the other teams underneath, as Brooklyn is 5 back and they have no shot, although they are still mathematically alive. But we know that with the games dwindling down, there's no way that they're going to run the table and Atlanta's going to sweep the rest of the way. Which leads to an interesting question here that I wanted to talk about on Thursday's podcast is, any lead safe in the NBA? Think back last week where the Hawks beat the Celtics twice. Think about that. The Hawks are at the bottom of the playing scenario as a 10 seed, and the Celtics are in the penthouse where the Hawks are in the basement. And the Hawks beat them twice, including the game last week, Tuesday, where the Celtics had a 30-point lead and blew it. And then they also lost in the last seconds Friday night to the Hawks, as they stayed in Atlanta for a few days. And who knows, staying in Atlanta, if that was a positive or negative for a Celtic team. But with that, and then with the Lakers beating the Bucks in the opening of their road trip, to where they were down 18 in the fourth quarter, and LeBron James didn't even suit up. And for the Bucks, who, as we all know, they have problems abound, despite the fact that they are look like they're going to be entrenched in a two seed in the East. But for them to rally back, and I get it, Anthony Davis had a monster game, 34 points, 23 rebounds, played over 50 minutes. It was a double overtime game. Austin Reeves with a triple-double with hero ball threes to extend games into overtime, etc. But the Bucks, really, 18 points against a LeBron-less led Laker team to lose that game at home? The Bucks have a lot of question marks. They have the talent there. We know they have a bit of a pedigree going back to the 2021 season. I get it that Budenholzer's not there, but you still have Giannis. You still have guys like Brook Lopez, Bobby Portis, Chris Middleton, who had been on that championship team of 3 years ago. But that's the Bucks there in a nutshell. But these leads, for whatever the reason, these teams go to sleep, pedal off the metal, and the Celtics have done this twice now. They did it against the Cavaliers when they had a 22-point lead in the fourth quarter, and they blew that game. And then they had, what, a 9-game winning streak at that point? I think it was 11 at the time. And then they had a 9-game winning streak here against Atlanta, and they blew that game. So I don't want to make this about the Celtics because they're going to have more questions to be answered in April, May, and hopefully June. But you have to wonder about these leads. And I get it, postseason is going to be different where teams are going to lock in and fixate on trying to slow that team. But we've seen teams come back from big-time deficits, and it's crazy. What used to be a big lead, 12, 14, 16 points in the fourth quarter, is no longer the case. And as it is, a 22 or even 30-point lead isn't big enough. Does make you wonder, this is the sport in 2024. It's about the threes, and if you have hot shooters who are making key baskets in big moments, this is what's going to happen. So we'll have to keep that in mind as you get to the postseason. I'm sure you're going to see less of that with those big comebacks, but you can have a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter, and you still have to hold your breath on whether or not your team's going to come out alive, no matter it's a 1-8, 2-7, 3-6, or 4-5 matchup, because that's just the way the NBA is here, not only just this year, but over the last half dozen years and beyond. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. Let me see, anything else happening in the association? Let me peek quickly. Oh, I mentioned about, yes, the scenario regarding whether or not Anunoby or Randall. I'll talk more about that down the road. That's all I pretty much have with the association. I'm just taking one last peek here. And then I'll get to the baseball. Right now, I want to keep this under an hour. So as I pivot here, yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah, we talked about that. I know Wembanyama had that big game against the Knicks, where he had that 40-point game in overtime. And even Brunson scored 61 in the game, and they still lost. And that just goes to show you, Knicks lose to Wembanyama, who's going to be the rookie of the year, despite the fact that they are in last place and got the worst, last place in the West, worst record in the conference, but that's for another time. Let me get to the baseball, and you've had an interesting first 4 days. Talk about a lot to unpack, and who would have thought that there would have been so much as far as takeaways here over the first 4 days of the baseball season. Now, there's so much that I could get into. Do I even start with the Mets? Should I just like spare you with that at this very moment, people? I could talk about the teams that are undefeated and the teams who haven't won, and I guess that kind of ties in. So, sadly, my guys and gals, I'm going to have to get into this right out of the gate. So, I have a dark, twisted nightmare just a week into the season, and I get it. People are going to say, Jay Reels, are you kidding? We're just 3 games in. This isn't the NFL where if this was week 3 or week 4 and you're 0-3 and 0-4, your season's over for the most part. Understood. But when I look at the Mets, and I'll start there, and how they performed at Citi Field over the weekend, where they got one run on opening day on one hit, a Starling Marte home run. Freddy Peralta shut him down, their bullpen shut him down, and the bullpen does not have Devin Williams, who's an all-star closer, who's going to be out for the first 3 months with stress fractures in his back. So it's not as if they have a lockdown guy in that ninth inning. So that's number one. Then during that game, you had the slide with Rhys Hoskins into Jeff McNeil. And I know McNeil got crazy there. And I understand why, because he got the spike into Jeff McNeil's leg. And therefore, he stood over him and pointed at him. And both of the benches and bullpens emptied. Much ado about nothing. But a lot of the talk afterwards, McNeil was saying that, yeah, we know how type of a player he is. And they have a history between Hoskins and the Mets, with his showboating around the bases to Jacob Rehm, if you remember years ago, who brushed him back and then hit a home run. He took 34 seconds around the bases. And for Hoskins, who's had a history in that ballpark, and even mentioned that in his postgame, well, what did he do the next day? All he did was hit a 2-run homer, had 4 RBIs, and Johan Ramirez threw behind him to where he got ejected, as well as Carlos Mendoza. And the Mets were down 7-2 before they made it interesting, where Brett Beatty hit a pinch hit 3-run homer, and then Pete Alonso hit his first home run to make it 7-6 in the 8th inning. But I believe it was in the 9th when they made it 7-6, but that fell short as the Brewers were able to win game 2. And then yesterday, another meek performance. And I also got to throw Luis Severino. I get it, one game, but I said it to you back then when they signed him. I don't know what Steve Cohen had seen. Maybe he was trying to catch lightning in a bottle. 5 innings, 12 hits, 5 runs, got smacked around the ballpark. The same issue that he had last year with the Yankees. So it's one game, I get it. Let's see how Severino does game 2 and beyond. But boy, not a good start for Severino. And then yesterday they lose 4-1, go meekly into the afternoon, and they start their season 0-3. Mendoza gets kicked out of his second game in his managerial career. And who comes to town? I get it. It's not the 84 Tigers, but the Tigers come in as one of the undefeated teams in the sport as they're 3-0. Could they leave Citi Field at the end of this week 1-5, or dare I even say 0-6? You know, I'm going to talk about it Wednesday, so stay tuned to what's going to lie ahead here on this podcast. So that's number one. Now, my other nightmare is the Yankees sweeping the Astros in Houston, and Juan Soto is now a conquering hero. And I know Brian Cashman, his Miller Lite or whatever he ate from the airport leaving Houston to go to Arizona, where the Yankees will face the defending National League Championship, the champions, tonight over the course of the next 3 days. And for the GM, who I'm sure had his feet up and had the best flight ever, because Soho not only was 9-for-17 in the series with a big home run there on Saturday and a big RBI late in the game there, I believe yesterday. I got to double check that. But for Soto to have the hot start, he's batting 529. He threw a guy out of the plate there on Friday. Now, mind you, that was it. Please. It's not as if he threw him out from the right field corner. Let's call it as we see it. Nice play. Saved the Astros from tying the game. Understood. And I understand I could look like I'm throwing cold water on the Yankees. Yes, to a certain extent. But when you watch that replay, I mean, he had all the momentum. He was in pretty much short right field. If he can't throw a guy out from that spot in the outfield, then forget about it. Everybody's going to run on him. But he was able to get that play. Great series for him. Yankees 4-0. No Gerrit Cole. But here's the thing. More cold water, people. Last September, the Yankees went into Houston. And as we all know, the Yankees have just a tough time against the Astros over the years, especially in the postseason. Dating back to 15 in the wild card game, to 2017, 2019, Altuve, and then the sweep in 2022 in the LCS. And then, yes, they swept the Astros last year, September 1-2-3. Look it up. And then now they start the season in Houston, and what do? They swept them the first four games here. So, yes, maybe they've exercised a demon, so to speak, by winning 7 straight dating back to last September. But newsflash, the Astros are awful at home. What was their record last year in the regular season? Their record was 39-43 in their building. Let me see if I got my math correct. No, I take that back. What's 38, 39, 43, 41? They were 39-42. Math is usually my strong point. But anyways, besides the point. 39-42, 3 games under 500 in their building. I believe they got swept by the Royals there after the Yankees swept them. That's just all you need to know about how the Astros played in their building last year. And on top of all that, in the championship series against the Rangers, what happened there? The Rangers won all 4 games at Minute Maid. So I get it that the Yankee fans should be geeked up. I get it that they could puff out their chest, and they have every right to. 100%. But that Astro team, I'm sure I could put 9 guys of my own squad and go in there, and we could beat the Astros for 1 game. That's how bad. And Josh Hader yesterday spit the bit. Tie game, gave up the run, and there you have it. So there's your new acquisition there for the Astros, as a guy with the long hair. I don't even know if he still has the long hair. I'm sure he does. I didn't watch the highlight, but I know he gave up the run. Again, busy weekend, people. So there you have it. Yankees 4-0, flying, the best start since 2003. I get it. And yes, got to give him kudos. But it's not as if they haven't beaten the Astros in that building and swept them before. And it's not as if the Astros have been world beaters in their building dating back to last year. So you got to temper that a little bit. And I would think they'll probably win 2 out of 3 in Arizona before coming home to open up their season, I believe, against the Blue Jays. So right now, everything is coconuts and palm trees in pinstripe land. Congratulations. So as I move it along here, other things of note, besides the scenario regarding Johan Ramirez, 3-game suspension for him because of the throwing behind Rhys Hoskins, how about Genesis Cabrera in Tampa, where on a play yesterday or 2 days ago where the ball, third baseman charged, threw it into right field, and then the batter, which was Jose Caballero, the infielder, who tried to bunt down the third baseline, third baseman throws it in the right field, and Caballero tried to stretch it all the way to third, gets tagged out, but Genesis Cabrera, the pitcher who happened to be standing behind the third baseman, and as he was tagged out, then Cabrera was the next in line and harmlessly bumped Cabrera, but then Cabrera, for whatever reason, took offense to that, to where Caballero said, "Hey, well, what was that all about?" And then Cabrera just snuffed him. So he's going to get 3 games on top of that, which was unwarranted. I don't know why Cabrera got all upset. But for him, he's going to have to sit out. And I'm sure they're appealing that because I believe Ramirez even pitched in the game yesterday for the Mets. So let's see what's going to happen with those two guys. But here are your big starts. Pirates 4-0. Tigers sweep the White Sox. No big deal there. They're 3-0, as I mentioned, coming into Citi Field. Yoshinobu Yamamoto, better. 5 scoreless innings against the Cardinals, but they ended up losing. But the Dodgers did win 3 out of 4. They're 4-2 there in the NL West. And Mookie Betts is off to a torrid start, batting .500. He took an 0-for yesterday, and he's down to .500. So that's all you need to know about the start that he's had with LA to kick off his season. And I know that I didn't talk about that. I talked about it briefly last week, but to get into it, and now it's already old news, but I'm sure it's going to crop up at some point as MLB's doing their investigation on Shohei Ohtani. He had the press conference, didn't take any questions, 11 minutes. I'll spend literally 60 seconds on this. But now let's see where this investigation goes, whether or not Ohtani was involved in any gambling. Hopefully not in the sport. I would think he'd be a little bit smarter than that, but whether he gambled with his buddy, we all know about the $4.5 million that was owed to an offshore bookie that was taken out of his account, where Ohtani in his press conference said that, "I'm shocked, money was stolen," etc. And then the interpreter in Korea had 2 stories. He said, "Oh yeah, he helped me out. He said, never do it again," where Ohtani did lend them the money, but then the next day retracted all that. And now you can't find the interpreter. You can't find the spokesperson from ESPN that broke that story about the interpreter and that the money was transferred mutually between Ohtani and the interpreter. So yeah, who knows how this is going to unfold. You know, I'll be on top of that as the days and weeks move along. And I know Jordan Montgomery signed with Arizona. I don't know if he's going to pitch against his former team. I don't know what Arizona did. I know they won 3 out of 4 against Colorado, but I don't know which game he started. I'm sure he's, now that I think about it, he's probably still working his way back with simulated starts and minor league starts to get himself prepared for Arizona when he embarks on his 1-year, $25 million deal. But that's what I have there with the baseball. Very intriguing start, opening few days, weekend, etc. And you know I will be all over this as we move it along. Now let me get my skates, lace them up, go to the NHL before NFL, and I'll wrap it up here. NHL right now, the one team that you have to pay attention to, and I understand there are a bunch of teams, the Rangers are as hot as a pistol. This team now has the most points, and I just don't want to base it on that because they have had a torrid stretch here to where they have 104 points, tops in the sport, 50 wins. Right now, they are on the fast track to having the President's Trophy. Now, I get it that the Dallas Stars are just a point behind them. And then you have the Bruins at 101, Carolina's 101. They are also within a shot of the division as well, although the Rangers have a game in hand because Carolina's played 75 and the Rangers have played 74. But for the Rangers, they are a complete team. You even have Alexis Lafreniere, who I've gotten on his case in the past as a number one overall pick, much ballyhooed coming into the sport, had a hat trick there against the Arizona Coyotes. I understand he got an empty net at the end, but it does count. 25 goal season for him. He certainly flourished on this team, and it looks like he could be a guy that you're going to have to look out for, especially this postseason. But they are just a well-balanced team. Obviously, they have the veteran leadership with guys like Artemi Panarin, Mika Zibanejad, Chris Kreider, who scored his 35th goal in the process, And then Vincent Trocheck, who was a guy that was brought over from Carolina last year. You have the young guys like Lafreniere. You have very good defense led by Andy Fox. The goaltender, Igor Shesterkin, who I got on him early this year, but he's played well throughout this stretch. And this is a team that could come out of the East. Now, it's going to be a barn burner because you have, again, the Bruins at 101. Florida, the defending Eastern champions, who have played well for the most part. Although, of recent note, they've been, what, in the last 10 games, 4-5-1. So they've hit a little low. But you would think once the playoffs begin, they'll be ratcheting it up. And similar to the NBA, you got, depending on the team, anywhere between 7 to 9 games left of their season. But I think the Rangers are going to be the team to look out for because this is one that they may be peaking at the right time. They have played fantastic here. And they're going to have a schedule where they're going to pad these stats. They have the Islanders 2 more times here over the course of the final 2 weeks of the season. They have the Penguins coming into their building tonight. And the Penguins are a dead team walking. They have the Devils come Thursday. And that's going to be, come Wednesday night. And that's going to be interesting to see whether or not Matt Rempe is going to be in the lineup, where the Devils will have Curtis McDermott, the guy who they brought from Colorado to be that resident tough guy, whether or not that they're going to face off. And you would think they're going to at some point. And Wednesday night could be the last time. So that's something that's on my radar, as you know, and I'll discuss there come Thursday's podcast. But the Rangers, they look like they're going to be the team to beat in the East. And I understand the Bruins and Florida, for that matter. You can even throw in Carolina. But the Rangers look formidable here. And they beat Colorado in Colorado there on Thursday night. And this Ranger team is loaded. There isn't anything else I could say. And give it up for Jonathan Quick, who now has recorded the most wins by a goalie, in the U.S. goalie, in the history of the league, as he surpassed Ryan Miller. So that was an achievement. The longtime L.A. King goalie, who's been a tremendous backup for Igor Shesterkin. Talk about a security blanket, just in case if Shesterkin went down or had to be pulled in a game, as we saw a couple of times there. That was a couple of years ago, not last year. Obviously, the Rangers were one and done in the first round against the Devils. So, Rangers are going to have to certainly pay attention to here. And that's just the teams in the East. In the West, I know Dallas. They have certainly made a move here. They have done phenomenally well in that Central Division. They are currently in first place. They have won, 7 in a row. They still have a slight lead. I understand it's 3 points. And when you get this late in the season, although the Avalanche do have a game in hand, so you have to put that in the back of your mental Rolodex. But for Dallas to go on this stretch, I'm sure there's a fraction of the Star fans going to say, hey, what about us? I understand you live in New York, Rangers in your backyard. I'm not a Ranger fan, people, but I have a keener eye on what's going on there as opposed to Dallas, because I'm not following the Stars on a day-in, day-out basis, although I am paying attention to what's happening here. But the Stars have played well, and they look like they could be a one seed when it's all said and done, because Vancouver in the Pacific, they have 100 points too, and they have a 6-point lead over Edmonton, who they're still fighting. They're still an outside shot for them to maybe even overtake the Canucks for first place in that division. Yes, there are 6 points, but they have 2 games in hand against Vancouver, and I don't know if they have a game against them in the schedule. I can take a look at that real quick, but this is going to be a fight to the finish. And last week I was talking about you had 7 teams that could be for the President's Trophy. And you can still talk about those teams in the mix there. Although Vancouver, maybe even Colorado, not to say they've come back to the pack, but they have an outside shot to possibly get there. But this is going to be an intriguing final couple of weeks to see where these teams land in the standings. And as we take a look as to where the chips may fall, what the seedings go, and the final games are not going to be until, I'm looking at Edmonton's schedule, 2 weeks from this coming Thursday. So unlike the NBA, which I believe they'll end their season, I think it's 2 weeks from yesterday, because then you have the play-in tournament start Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then of course you have the playoffs begin that Saturday. But Edmonton, they have a very interesting schedule. They go to St. Louis tonight, at Dallas Wednesday, huge game, Colorado at home, then at Calgary, Vegas, big game, Arizona, Vancouver, San Jose, Arizona, Colorado. So they have a very interesting schedule. It's all in front of them to see whether or not they can overtake even Vancouver, maybe even Dallas, as far as overall. Now, again, I don't think that's going to be the case, because they have 94 points, but we have to concentrate on the division only. So let's see if Edmonton, who's had that crazy season, started off 2-10, fired the coach, had a 8-game winning streak on top of a, 16-game winning streak. Just a crazy season for Edmonton. And as we take a look at the standings here, before we go, especially with the wild card, I know somebody was asking me, hey, the Islanders still have a shot there considering the Flyers and Red Wings, they have hit the skids, have not played well. Not to say the Islanders have been world beaters in the least, but in the East, we'll go through those standings real quick. Boston, Florida, Toronto. I know Tampa is 4 points behind Toronto to see if they could overtake them for a third seed. Chances are that may not be the case, but you do have Tampa number one comfortably in the wild card as far as the East goes, and then the Flyers, who are 7 points behind the Lightning. But the Flyers, currently 2 points ahead of Detroit. Also, 5 points ahead of the Islanders. And then you have the Capitals, too. You also have to talk about them because the Capitals, they have the third seed behind Carolina and the Rangers. But because of the tiebreaker, they overtake the Flyers. But they also could be a wild card team when it's all said and done. But currently, the Capitals are in the 2-3 bracket there with Carolina. And like I mentioned, Detroit 2 behind Philadelphia, Islanders 5 behind Philadelphia, and then the Devils 6 behind, and if you want to throw in the Penguins there, 7 behind, etc. And then out west, Vancouver, Edmonton, you have Dallas, Colorado, Winnipeg, and Winnipeg is really, man, you talk about a tailspin, and that started here when they beat the Rangers, but then they lost to the Devils, Islanders, and they haven't won since then. Now, they're going to make the playoffs comfortably. They have 94 points. They don't have to worry about Nashville, although they're 4 points behind them in the division. But you would think that they're going to at least eke out a couple of wins before it's all said and done. So, Dallas, Colorado, Winnipeg, Central, Vancouver, Edmonton, Vegas. Vegas, 4 points behind Edmonton. And, of course, they face one another down the road. Nashville, 90 points. LA Kings, 87. The top two seeds in the wild card there. And then you have St. Louis, 5 points behind LA, which is not looking good. And then you have Minnesota, 8 points behind LA. And they're a long shot to make it. And then the rest of the teams, you can say bye-bye. So that's what you have in the NHL. Let me see anything as far as news and notes with what's happening on the ice before we wrap it up with the NFL. And I got a couple things to say about that before I bid adieu. And I know I'm cutting it close here to the top of the hour. NHL, as the page doesn't want to load. All right, I'll come back to that. Oh, let's see. Talked about Jonathan Quick. Yes, Austin Matthews, 60 goals again. Didn't mention that. So, I don't know. He's going to make 70. Outside shot, chances are he's going to fall short unless he has a couple of hat tricks thrown in along the way. And that's what you have there. Yeah, I know Arizona stopped the Predators' point streak at 18 games. All right, fine. Kudos to them. But the Predators are going to make it to the postseason, as we know. Now let me get to the football before I wrap it up and put on the helmet and shoulder pads. Oh yeah, I'm already pushing the hour, so I'll try to make this quick. There have been a bunch of rule changes, some that I like. The rule changes being that the kickoff, you're going to have that implemented back into the sport. And it's similar to the XFL, which I like, because you're going to have just the kicker and the returner are going to be the only players that are going to have the chance to move once the ball is in the air and caught. And they're going to have to run it out of the end zone because you're going to have 10 players from both teams gunning for the returner. But until the returner catches the ball, then that's when the play really starts. Which, when the XFL, going back to 2020, they had that rule. I loved it because I had covered the Guardians, the local team here, and being at a couple of those games before the pandemic hit, I saw that play. I said, man, that's pretty interesting. I like that. Where the play literally starts at the 40-yard line, where the returner at least could have an opportunity to take it out past the 25, past the 30, and who knows all the way. And then it also lessens the factor of concussions, where you're not going to have players going full speed into one another, where you could certainly have not only just concussions, but also spinal injuries, players carted off, etc. So that's one rule that I truly like. I know you have the no hip drop tackle. I understand safety of the game, etc. But there's going to be some controversy on that because there's going to be that in between whether or not the player does the hip tackle, which means that he's going to literally, as he tries to grab the receiver, running back, or even the quarterback for that matter, it's almost as if he's going to hang on to them and then use his weight to almost lift himself up and then drop him using the hip to the turf and then tackle the player that way. So, again, that could be borderline where a horse tackle, you know what the horse tackle is. The hip drop, unless it's egregious, unless it's evident, obvious, that's one thing. But I'm sure there's going to be some controversy surrounding that when we get into next season. So that's one that, I could give or take. I know they pushed the trade deadline back a week to week 9 as opposed to week 10. And then you also have 3 looks from the officials, and I guess it's going to be the eye in the sky, whether it's intentional grounding, roughing the passer, and hits out of bounds. Those are going to be assisted by officials, whether they're in the stadium or not. So that's going to slow the game down a little bit more, but I guess that's something that you're going to have to see going into next year. And I think it's just a 1-year thing. I don't know if it's just going to be into the 2024 season and it's going to be instituted after that. So that's something I can understand. Now, intentional grounding to me is obvious. If the guy's out of the pocket and he throws it past the line of scrimmage, even if it's a scenario where there's not a receiver in the vicinity, as long as he passes it past the line of scrimmage, he's fine. If he's just going to run out of the pocket and just throw it right there, like spike it, then I could see that being intentional grounding, even though he's outside of the pocket. But if he's outside, throws it past the line of scrimmage, he should be good. But I guess they have to review that. So, all right, so be it. Now let me get to, well, maybe I'll save that for last. Let me get to some player movements here. Because now with this new rule implemented and the Pittsburgh Steelers, I don't know what they've done here. I don't know what's in the water. I don't know what has taken over that stadium. I know it's Acrisure now. I was going to call it Heinz Field. But they have had an offseason unlike any other. And not to break that all down right now, I'm sure you followed it all along. If not, go back to a couple of the previous episodes. In fact, I had one of my headlines as far as the Steelers being part of this offseason frenzy when it comes to free agents and trades, etc. But they bring in Cordarrelle Patterson. Now, I understand he may be a little long in the tooth, but because of this new kickoff rule, now you can have a guy that's a threat to not only get to maybe the 40-yard line midfield, but he may be able to take it to the house, which is huge because the Steelers do not have a big return game, haven't had it in years, dating back to when Antonio Brown was returning punts, even kickoffs when he was a rookie way back when he returned a kickoff 89 yards in his rookie year against the Titans in Tennessee. I digress, but I thought that was a very wise signing to bring in a guy like that with that new rule implemented. Let me get my words and my grammar diction corrected. So I thought that was a sneaky, under-the-radar type move. Rams signed Tre'Davious White to go in that secondary, the former Buffalo Bill. And then the Jets, give it up for them, making moves this offseason, bringing in Mike Williams, another target for Aaron Rodgers. We know about the offensive line, the upgrades. I get it. Tyron Smith has been around 14 years. Same for, maybe not the same exact amount of years, the Morgan Moseses and the John Simpsons of the world. It's not as if you're bringing in Jonathan Ogden in his prime, but they made some moves there, and now they bring in Hassan Reddick. You could say it's a bit of a trade where Bryce Huff signed with Philadelphia, and now Reddick comes back for a conditional draft pick, a guy who does rush the passer, can be a threat to go along with Quinnen Williams, even CJ Mosley, the linebacker, and that's going to be huge. You need to have a pass rusher in this day and age, especially in the postseason, if you want to go far. So I thought that was a very shrewd move. 1-year deal. He's a free agent after this year. So kudos to the Jets for pulling the trigger on that. And now, as I close out, let's get right to it and I'll try to be concise. I'm going to call this the NFL is NFLing again. And this has me just, rabid. Twofold. Speaking of the Eagles, do you know that they're opening their season in Brazil the day after the Kansas City Chiefs? In all likelihood, as we know, whenever the Super Bowl winner, the Thursday night game to open the season is going to be where, in the home stadium of the Super Bowl winner, obviously in this case the Chiefs. So the next day, everybody knows that the Eagles are going to play in Sao Paulo, Brazil, because they have, the NFC has the extra home game this year with the 17-game season, so it's flip-flops every year between the AFC and NFC. So because that's a home game for them, they'll still have their 8 dates in their building so they don't lose a gate in the normal 8 games that they would get. With all that being said, guess what? How are you going to watch the game? Oh, is it going to be on ESPN? Oh, is it going to be on NBC? Maybe you'll have Collinsworth and Mike Tirico. Oh, no, is it a Fox game? Oh, is it maybe CBS? Oh, where is it going to be, J-Reels? streamed on Peacock. Seriously? This is what's going to come to now? Where you're going to have these games? An opener, I might add. You're going to have to subscribe to Peacock? We went through this last year with the playoff game, Dolphins, Chiefs, and now we have to go through it again? And you know people are going to subscribe. Oh, it's just a nightmare. Another money grab. Stop. But no, it gets better. The NFL, as we've seen over the last couple of years, they played on Christmas Day. Now, Christmas Day has fallen on a Sunday 2 years ago, and then last year fell on a Monday, where you had the three games to highlight the whole afternoon into the evening, which obviously is going to upset Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, and their Christmas Day extravaganza from 12 noon to pretty much 1 in the morning. No, the NFL has to say, we got to barge our way because we're the NFL. We're the shield, the impenetrable one. Understandably, and I get it, deservedly so, because they're the one sport, gambling, fantasy, etc. But now, the NFL, they're also going to have some Christmas Day games. Oh, okay, great. But here's the problem. They're going to have two games on Christmas. Okay, not the three. It's not going to be 1, 4:30, and 8:15. I'm sure it's going to be 4:30 and 8:15, because right in prime time, etc. Oh, but wait, does Christmas fall not on a weekend? Oh, it's not going to be on a Monday because we just experienced that last year or just a few months ago. And then it's a leap year this year. It's going to fall on a Wednesday. Are you serious? We're going to have two Christmas Day games on a Wednesday. So you know what that means, people? When it's going to be next year on a Thursday, and we already have Thursday night games as it is to begin with. So that's prime for the NFL. Friday, the year after that, you're going to have Christmas Day games because it's going to lead into the weekend. And therefore, this helps out because the college schedule, which is going to be interesting because it's going to conflict with the bowl games, and you're going to have the playoff this year. So you're going to have that scenario where the NFL is not going to care about the postseason, but you're going to have games on Saturday because how are you going to get these games? I get it, you could look at the previous game, the Thursday night, but you're going to have four teams playing on Christmas Day. So what are you going to have, a game that's going to be played on Saturday and then they're going to play on Wednesday? I mean, this is just a disaster. It's compromising the integrity to a certain extent. Now, they're going to work it out no matter what. I get it. Because you're going to have the Thursday game. And who knows? Maybe the NFL is going to put up two Thursday games the week before Christmas. So that'll be on the 19th. So then you may get a sense of those teams, at least two of them, play on the Wednesday night. Because what are you going to do? You can't have, I'm just throwing four teams out. You're not going to have Chiefs Raiders and let's say Niners Eagles play that Thursday night. And then the following Wednesday Christmas, you're going to have Raiders, Eagles, and then Chiefs. You can't have that. You're not going to have the same matchup 2 weeks in a row. How the NFL is going to pull this off? And they're going to pull it off, as we all know. But please, another money grab, another just barge through the front door. We're going to put it on a Wednesday, and we don't care. So you're going to see Christmas Day games from here to eternity. And think about this as I close. You're now going to have, this coming season, as we all know, you're going to have Thursday night games. You're going to have Saturday, late in the season in December, as we know. Of course, Sunday. Of course, Monday. You don't have Tuesday, but now you're going to have Wednesday. There's going to be one day in the week that you're not going to have an NFL game come next year. Because remember, just a few minutes ago, you're going to have the Friday game. You have to get Peacock to watch it. But the NFL is trying to dominate the landscape. And what's happening here, and I don't know if you're paying attention, but I surely am, it's just too much. You're spreading it thin. You have all these mouths to feed. Therefore, these games, I understand early on, maybe not, but it's just too much. The one thing I loved about the NFL, it was Sunday, Monday, okay, Thursday. But now, you're just beating us over the head. And I get it, the NFL reigns supreme. But enough is enough. You have way too much money to burn, way too much attention, and we get it. Understood. But one more time, I can't stress it enough. I've had it. Can we just keep it to where it's at and not just go overboard with these games on all these different platforms, on all these different days? I've had it! That'll do it, my good people. I know this was longer than normal. This is what happens when I didn't have a podcast on Thursday, but I promise I'll be back Thursday, whether on Apple, Spotify, jreels.com, any podcast platform, or of course here on my YouTube channel at jreels. Thank you so much for stopping by. I appreciate it. No April Fool's jokes. Serious right here as we move it along into the second quarter of 2024. And I got a lot in store, people. As always, please subscribe, rate, review. Throw me a few stars, write a review. I greatly appreciate it. Follow me on my YouTube channel for a lot coming down the pike here over the course of these days, weeks, and months to come. At JReels, as you know. Hit me up with a question, comment, suggestion on the following. Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, the JReels podcast. Also on X, Twitter, JReels1, just the number. The old-fashioned way, the JReels podcast at gmail.com. I'll be more than happy to follow up with you guys and gals, because whether you do or do not know, and if you haven't heard over the course of the last hour and what, 10 minutes plus, this is what I love to do, people. I'm doing this full time, as you well know. And if you don't know, yes, this is it. I'm trying to make a brand, business, etc. Follow your boy. If you've been following me, you know how much I appreciate you guys and gals. And if your first time, fifth time, whatever, hop on board, people, because I'm not going anywhere as long as I'm alive and breathing. I'm going to continue to bring fire, passion, energy, fury with my thoughts, opinions, critiques, analysis, praise, feelings on anything and everything. That happens on the world of the diamond, ice, gridiron, hardwood, golf course, racetrack, tennis court, boxing ring, octagon, you name it. From my lips to your ears, from my heart to your soul, from where I am to wherever you are, the JReels podcast always comes correct, direct, and in full effect. From the South Bronx, the South Beach, the South Central, the South Pacific, and all points beyond, peace, love, and God bless everybody. And until next time on the JReels podcast, on the flip, baby.